This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Today, we hear from a racial justice activist about how the movement continues in the new year. We learn about the rise of micro-weddings, look at some World War II films, and Bubbler Talk is back with an appreciation for Milwaukee's basement bars. But first, we'll start with the top research findings of 2020 from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. In 2020, the forum produced 58 reports, policy briefs, and data tools on a range of topics impacting Wisconsinites. For such a monumental year, it's hard to narrow down the main takeaways, but they did just that. Rob Henkin, president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, joins me now to share their top five research findings of 2020. Your most recent report is the top five findings of 2020, and I know that must have been difficult with so much that happened, but we'll start with the shift to online shopping and how this impacted Wisconsin. And this brought up something I didn't think about until now reading the report, which is all of the online sales that we all partook in probably can't be attributed as a local economy necessarily, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was an very important shift in economic activity that really had started obviously pre-pandemic, but was vastly accelerated by the safer at home restrictions and so forth. So what we saw was an explosion of online purchasing, which most people don't think about it, but that has an impact on state and local government finances to the extent that governments are dependent on sales taxes, that while those same sales taxes are being collected, there's a provision in state law that essentially says that certain online purchases made from out-of-state retailers, the sales tax collections from those purchases need to be used to reduce income taxes for Wisconsin residents. And so this was a provision in state law that was adopted prior to the pandemic. The purpose was to say, look, if we're going to make an effort to beef up these online sales tax collections, that benefit should accrue to the taxpayer and not to the state. But what really ended up happening that we were able to show is that while other states were able to make up some of their loss of overall sales tax revenue by simply collecting those taxes on online purchases, state of Wisconsin has not been able to do so to the same extent.
Along the lines of challenges for state budgets, we'll shift to police spending. So the state's police spending has increased as a share of municipal spending. And of course, in the wake of calls for defunding the police, what did the policy forum look at specifically when it comes to this?
So first of all, this topic really is not a pandemic-related topic. It's more related to the monumental events that unfolded during the course of 2020, which obviously were not just the pandemic, but the protests this summer. So we decided to take a look at what municipal police spending trends looked like to just provide some context for this debate about defunding police. And we clearly do not weigh in. We don't even try to define what police defunding really means. But what we were able to point out was that if you look back over the past 20 years or so, Wisconsin's police spending has increased as a share of municipal spending. So whereas law enforcement spending as a share of the total was about 17.8% roughly 20 years ago, that grew to 20.0% by 2018. Actually, that was going back to 1986. We also found that on a per capita basis, Wisconsin municipalities are now spending about $219 per capita as of 2018, and that's about a $74 increase from the amount spent in 1986, and it's about a 30% increase when accounting for inflation. So without, again, trying to say that that should lead to reductions in municipal police spending, we think it's important context. There's no question that the need to spend more on police, which has been driven in many respects, not by added numbers of police officers, but simply by the growth in salary and benefits of existing police officers, that is taking up a greater share of municipal budgets and is contributing to crowding out municipal spending on other important functions.
This report also found that despite increased spending, police staffing levels in most of Wisconsin's largest cities have lagged with the population growth over the past decade or so.
Exactly. So I'm glad you brought that up. Again, we can't say that this increase as a share of total spending has led to more police being on the street. In fact, indications are, at least in the large cities, that's not the case, which makes the question about potentially seeking to divert money from police budgets to other needs, whether that can be accomplished without unduly decreasing the number of police officers on the street.
Also in your top five report were a couple of stories on education. So we'll start with your focus on the growing gap between teachers and students of color. So what were your main specific findings when it came to this? Was it both private and public schools?
No. So the data that we used for this report was really from the Department of Public Instruction. We wish we could have included private schools, but we just did not have the data source. It did include charter schools to the extent that those schools are chartered by a school district. So it gives us a nice look at that matchup between teachers of color and students of color. The good news is that we saw an increase in teachers of color over the 2009 to 2019 timeframe. The bad news is that the increase in students of color far eclipsed that increase. So the gap between teachers and students of color actually grew. When we look at that gap, right now about 30.7% of the public school district population is students of color, and only about 5.6% of the teacher population is comprised of teachers of color. Now, why is that a problem? There is a significant body of research that shows that there are some benefits for students of color of having teachers who look like them. Does that mean that the matchup has to be one-to-one? We're not saying that, and we don't know. But clearly, to the extent that this gap is growing, that is something that policymakers should be aware of.
And this was the first of two installments of a series. So what will your next report explore, and when can we expect that out?
So the next report is digging even more deeply into why this gap is growing and what might be done about it. So we have engaged actually teachers of color in a series of focus groups to try to get more insight into what strategies might be available to attract and retain teachers of color. So we think this is going to be a very nice additional piece of knowledge and context to match up with this first report, which was mostly data. And you can expect that report by late February or early March.
So another top finding in your report is another education story. Wisconsin's support for public higher education is significantly less than the rest of the nation. So what did you find to be the state's main higher ed challenges?
So I don't think that most people will be surprised, given that people are generally aware that there have been tuition freezes over the past several years, that as the state's budget challenges have grown tighter, there has been less wherewithal to provide support for the public universities and colleges. But I think what was really striking when we really dug in and again looked at some long-term trends, two big pieces jumped out. Number one, since the year 2000, Wisconsin's per student revenues from taxes and tuition at its public universities and technical colleges has fallen from 10% above the US average to about 9.2% below that average. So right now we're spending about $13,640 per student. The national average is $15,000 or so. We also found that for just the UW system, that was the state's second largest area of general purpose spending in 1992. Fast forward to today, and that has fallen to fifth highest. So I think these findings really provide some context for the slippage that has occurred in light of the tuition freeze and just the fact that state support has really not kept pace, not only with inflation, arguably, but with the pace by which other public colleges and universities with whom ours compete for students have been able to grow.
One big sector that's been devastated by the pandemic is arts and culture, especially since we can't gather in person in large numbers safely. And the Forum reported that Wisconsin puts fewer state dollars to arts and culture than any other state. Did you know this going in, or did this surprise you that Wisconsin is literally the last in the nation when it comes to allocating funds for this?
So clearly, what we knew going in was, as you said, this was certainly one of the sectors that was facing the most damage as a result of the pandemic, which is why we really wanted to try to quantify that. We also knew going in that Wisconsin had not yet attempted to do anything about this, to provide any type of specific relief for its arts and culture. And we had certainly seen anecdotally that special relief funds were being set up in other places. What was surprising for us, however, when we dug deep, was the fact that when you look at state dollars provided to support the arts and culture sector, that Wisconsin is actually dead last in terms of that type of support. So I think that both that tidbit of information combined with the fact that we were able to further point out, just in looking at the Midwestern states, how Wisconsin, at the point that we released this report in August, had not been providing any type of targeted relief, that you add up those two factors and it spells trouble. And I'm not saying that our report was directly related, but since that time, the good news is that the governor has announced actually three separate rounds of emergency relief funding for Wisconsin's arts and cultural organizations, totaling about $45 million.
So this pandemic has truly shown the strengths and weaknesses many systems have or don't have, and also what safety nets are needed. So just you personally, as you've tried to continue your work during this year, what was your main takeaway looking back on your work in 2020?
You know, Audrey, we over the years have been identifying sort of a set of core issues regarding the way we finance local governments and school districts in Wisconsin, at least raising the question whether our approach is simply anachronistic. It just hasn't been updated over time to respond to a variety of realities. We have pointed out some of the challenges with some really key quality of life sectors, areas like arts and culture and recreation and transit. I think what this really showed us is that these problems, which have been germinating for years, really got exposed even more severely by the pandemic. And to us, you know, this has been a way too overused quip about not wanting to let a crisis go to waste. But I think it really rings true here that this has exposed to us that, again, some of just these structural issues, looking at things like fire and EMS department consolidation and public health and how our local governments have been able to respond, in addition to just looking at the way we generate revenues to support these key functions. When you put all of this together, I think it really creates greater urgency around the need to look at structural reform. And that's an issue that the Forum is going to be focusing on even more heavily in 2021. And probably over the next 2 or 3 years after that as well.
Rob Hankin is the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and he joined us to talk about their top 5 research findings of 2020.